I hated everyone and I wanted them all to die, you know, just profusely. Radio Drone.
I'm Josh Hadley. This is Radio Drone. Peter is a very much a that guy. When you see Peter, you go, that's the guy.
I am the guy.
And then when you see Cecil, you go, I don't know, is that the guy?
I'm the robot.
You are the, are you a cyborg or an android?
Well, I could go for the old, no, I'm not going to do the Trek joke. Cyborg, really.
All right. Okay there, Van Damme, although I still don't think you could do the splits.
No, God, no. Unless you want to see me head to the hospital.
That's something I wouldn't mind seeing.
Oh, shut up.
Hey, Cecil, Adam and Eve promo.
If you like penis and you...
You can like vagina, too.
You can like vagina, too. You can like all kinds of orifices and genitals. Go to adamandeve.com and use the promo code DROME. To get some free DVDs.
Six
free DVDs. Mystery gift, a gift for him, a gift for her, banana underpants.
Free U.S. shipping.
Free U.S. shipping. The promo code DROME at adamandeve.com.
Now you see why you don't get, you see why you're not that much of that guy.
No, I certainly am not.
Now, when I brought up that guy, this is a phenomenon known in Hollywood as that guy syndrome, where you see these actors in everything, big budget movies, low budget movies, syndicated TV shows, high budget network TV shows. To people like us, we know their names. We know their body of work. They are recognizable to the person on the street, but they would just go, you know, that guy. He was in that movie and that TV show that was out last year where they'll recognize him. They'll even be like, oh, he was that villain on CSI. His name was, and no one knows their name, but you know their face. They're known as that guy. And these people usually don't get the respect I think that they deserve. So tonight we're going to give respect to some of that guys out there. Do you consider the whole that guy syndrome a problem with mainstream audiences, that they'll know Tom Cruise, they'll know Mel Gibson, but they won't know Michael Ironside or Lance Henriksen's name? Or is it just we're more obsessive? Or is it just that these people are destined to their entire career really being second banana? Because that's what they are. Usually they're supporting players or they're the villain in probably 90% of the cases.
I think when it comes to the recognizable actors, the leading men like the Tom Cruises and whatnot, it's easy to actually remember their names, because when you got the that guys, they are, as you said, usually just supporting characters like Thomas, I believe it's Rosales Jr. Is that one thug at the beginning of Cobra that's like shooting everybody. And you kind of just go, hey, I've seen him in a bunch of stuff, but never remember his name. Or a lot of people that refer to, you know, Robert Zadar as that dude with the huge jaw. Like, I think it's just kind of how it is, because they're, I guess, kind of lower level actors. They come in to do more supporting roles and play off of the lead more than be lead. So I think it just kind of comes with what they are in their profession. And that's primarily character actors.
The general public, they know the big stars because they're the ones that are constantly doing the tours. They're doing all the Today shows and the news programs, and they're the ones that, you know, when the movies get promoted, you know, it's Tom Cruise and, you know, it's all the big names that get promoted out there. You've got a lot of smaller, not even necessarily smaller, because a lot of them are the ones that are consistently working, where you've had actors that, you know, they had huge spikes and then they would drop down and they're doing, you know, crap, nothing. And then they kind of come back, like Travolta. You know, Travolta was like huge for a while and then he was doing nothing but the Look Who's Talking sequels, and then he got brought back with Pulp Fiction, and now he's kind of been able to stay consistent for a while. He's had a few dips, but he's still like a name. Whereas you've had actors that have always consistently worked. You've had guys that it's like they may not be huge stars, but they just did 5 movies last year.
Mm-hmm. Oh, not even necessarily that. Eric Roberts doesn't take a break. He literally, when he finishes a movie, he might have a week off, and then he's on the next movie or his next TV show appearance. People like Eric Roberts literally work all year around. That's all they do is work in movies and TV. They don't take a 3-month vacation like Tom Cruise. Well, I did Mission Impossible. Now I'm going to take a break for, a quarter of a year till my next project. People like Lance Henriksen and Eric Roberts always have some place they're going and something that they're in, And then usually what ends up happening, at least in my opinion, sometimes that guy ends up stealing the movie from what's supposed to be the star. Like Lance Henriksen. Stone Cold was supposed to be a Brian Bosworth vehicle. Lance Henriksen is the most memorable character and the most memorable actor in that movie. Again with Lance Henriksen, Hard Target is a completely forgettable John Woo, Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. Except Lance Henriksen as the most insane, over-the-top Van Damme villain ever.
Easily one of my favorite Van Damme films, and that may or may not have to do with Lance Henriksen's excellent fucking performance, because he's awesome in that movie.
Michael Ironside. I know Karate Kid, the next Karate Kid was supposed to be Hilary Swank's movie. All I remember is Michael Ironside is an insane gym teacher. He stole that movie.
He steals almost every movie, though.
He certainly does, Ham Tyler.
What happens is, that guy, they usually start off starring in lower budget materials, what would be drive-in materials in the 70s or direct-to-video stuff today, and then they slowly move up the ladder to being that guy, the sidekick or whatnot, like, to go back to Van Damme, Replicant. Really, Replicant is Michael Rooker's movie, but because Van Damme is both the sidekick and the villain, it makes sense if you see the movie, he overshadows Michael Rooker. Michael Rooker owns that movie, but yet it's thought of as a Van Damme film, which is, I think, unfortunate.
More recent one, right? Is
2001, maybe?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he played a clone. How is that old? He played a clone.
Yeah, Van Damme was a serial killer, and then so Michael Rooker was the cop hunting him. They cloned him and had his clone without the serial killer tendencies hunting the Van Damme serial killer. But really, I think that's a Michael Rooker movie that happens to have a lot of Van Damme in it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, but I mean, but again, even though he's not the big star that he was, more people know Michael Rooker now. So if they were to like Walking Dead. So if they were to release the movie, they probably would do like what they do with a lot of movies where someone who's in the movie has become more popular. In 2001, people still knew, were still big on Jean-Claude Van Damme. Now they're bigger on Michael Rooker, so they would probably put him front and center and then put Jean-Claude Van Damme like a little to the back.
Some of the ones on my list, like I think Sid Haig is one of the ultimate that guys. He's always intense. He's always awesome. People know his face, especially from Devil's Rejects and whatnot, and they tend to forget just how much mainstream stuff he did. Sid Haig, I bet you guys don't remember, he was on the 60s Batman show. He was on Star Trek.
I don't remember that.
He was on The Man from U.N.C.L.E. He was on the A-Team. He was a regular on Gunsmoke and Mission Impossible. He starred in over 100 episodes of the soap opera Mary Hartman, Mary Hartman. He was in the original Charlie's Angels. He was the villain in Jason of Star Command. Yet most people are going to know him as, wait, that's that guy from those Rob Zombie movies, right? Is that really how a that guy should be remembered? That it's weird how in Sid Haig's case, it's his mainstream work people forget.
It's really good that now people are starting to recognize him more and more, even if it is through Rob Zombie movies and stuff. At least people know him. I mean, people like us remember guys like Sid Haig doing, Corman films and his TV work and stuff like that. But now I'm glad that it's expanded to where now there are other people who recognize him, and he should be recognized because he's a damn good actor.
I think that probably it's better to be known as that guy than to not be known at all, Because yeah. Think about it. I mean, how many actors have come along where they're just there and gone? But then you have somebody like Sid Haig or Michael Ironside or whatnot, who's done so much, but they never were like, you know, huge mainstream success. But it's like, oh, that guy, I love that guy. You know, I think that kind of shows that they have staying power and that they are a lot of times more recognized than the big stars, because, you know, just because people don't know who they are, they're like, hey, you know, people get excited when you see, oh, that, and they start pointing, you know, that guy, you know, it sucks that they don't know their name, but still, you know, they're at least recognized. I'm sure there's a lot of actors that at this point would kill to be that guy's.
Well, you brought up Michael Ironside. Michael Ironside is one of my favorite actors, and I've been trying to get an interview with him for years. He gave an interview on the Scanners Criterion DVD where he talked about how he was making all of these, you know, drive-in movies and TV movies in Canada, and he had an epiphany one day. I'm never going to make it out of Canada if I keep doing this stuff. So he came to America, and then the very first thing he got was V, The Final Battle. And I mean, he did some stuff before that, you know, no one recognized, like him on the A-Team and Space Hunter, which was a massive bomb and whatnot.
Awesome movie.
It's an awesome movie, but it lost a ton of money.
Wasn't he Overdog?
He was Overdog, yes.
Yes.
He had no legs and giant claws for hands. And then he got Ham Tyler in V, The Final Battle. And he said after that, he's been working consistently. He literally says without V, he doesn't know he'd still be acting even. You know, so, but he realized, I can keep doing these low-budget movies, these movies that nobody is going to see, that these drive-in flicks like Visiting Hours and Scanners and whatnot. Remember, Scanners wasn't a hit when it came out. Mm-hmm. Or I can take the risk, move to Hollywood, and be that guy for a while. And it just happened that he did. He made more. He was probably one of the more mainstream that guys out there, I think.
Yeah, I mean, he's been in $100 million productions. And then, you know, hundreds.
Children of the Corn 6.
Yeah.
He's done Total Recall. Then Watchers and just all kinds of movies. And he's
hell,
always...
he was the main character in the third season of Sequest.
Yeah.
Captain Oliver Hudson. The best season of Sequest, I might add.
Replacing
Roy Scheider.
Roy Scheider. Which, I mean, that's pretty big shoes to step into.
Well, Michael Ironside has been one of my favorite actors since as far as I can even remember. I remember watching, you know, stuff like Watchers on TV and Total Recall and Starship Troopers and just all these movies when I was coming up. And he's always immediately recognizable to me. And it's not only because of his intensity and his unique look, but he always seems to lose some of his limbs, either his arms or his legs. Like, I kind of know him as that guy that's probably going to get his arms ripped off later.
He always also, when it comes to Michael Ironside, he always looks like he's having a blast. Even if the movie's terrible, he looks like he is having so much fun, usually as the villain. Like, yeah. Highlander 2, Christopher Lambert looks like he doesn't want to be there. Most of the cast look miserable. Michael Ironside looks like he is just having a ball, doesn't it?
Absolutely, especially in the subway scene when it's just zoomed in on his face and he just has this awesomely maniacal expression. Like, it's just fantastic.
Now, we're going to be jumping around a timeline here. I think one of the bigger that guys right now is J.K. Simmons. People know him, might know him from the Spider-Man movies as J. Jonah Jameson. I'll always know him from Oz. I'll always know him as Vern Schillinger, the sadistic rapist Nazi from Oz. What most people don't know him for, he's the yellow M&M in the M&M's commercials since the 1990s.
Really?
You, wow. You didn't know that? What? Yeah, he's the yellow M&M. He's the dumb one.
That's insane. Well, that wow. shows his ability as an actor to be able to disguise his that well.
He has gotten a lot more noticed lately because of a lot of the movies that he's done were like, you know, he was doing some indie darling movies. He did that piece of shit Juno. And
I will point out he had the only funny line in the whole film.
I vaguely remember because what was the line?
Right after Juno told him that she was pregnant, I don't remember what Michael Cera's name was, he goes, next time I see that boy, I'm going to punch him right in the dick. And I'm like, You know what? He had the only funny line in that whole piece of shit film.
He was the only likable character in the entire film. I hated everyone, and I wanted them all to die, just profusely. But he did that, and then, you know, he pops up in the Spider-Man movies, and he was just in that Whiplash, and everybody is gushing about it. I didn't see it yet, so I'm sure it's good, but I haven't seen it yet. Branching out a lot of that guy, because there's a lot of people who aren't saying, you know, oh my God, that guy, you know, they're saying J.K. Simmons.
Oh, absolutely. I think he's definitely one of those guys that come in and maybe won't steal the movie, sometimes does, but is always very memorable. He was easily one of the best things about the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies. I loved him in Burn After Reading, and he was even a highlight of Terminator Genisys. I mean, I really dig that dude as an actor.
Oh, yeah, I forgot he was in that.
He was the Shrink. Yeah. One of my favorite that guys is one that everybody knows, but even people that are fans of him get his name wrong all the time, and that is Bruce McGill. His most famous role arguably would be Daniel Day in Animal House. Mm-hmm. But I remember him from just stealing a Miami Vice episode from Crockett and Tubbs, the Out Where the Buses Don't Run. This is the great thing about that guys, especially like Bruce McGill. He's usually so intense that he might only work on the film for a day and have 5 minutes of screen time, but you remember him. In Michael Mann's The Insider, he is Russell Crowe's attorney, and he steals that five-minute scene from Russell Crowe and Wings Hauser. Dr. Wygant's testimony will be on this record! He steals that scene from Wings Hauser and Russell Crowe. That's not easy to do, you know?
Just looking at the movies I've seen him in, I really enjoyed him in stuff like Collateral and Law Abiding Citizen. He's definitely one of those guys who I don't think I ever really knew his name, but I've seen him pop up in a lot of movies and have liked him.
What about an older style that guy? Everyone from MST3K knows Mitchell, aka Joe Don Baker.
my God! What are we...
But Joe Don Baker... No. Joe Don Baker is absolutely a that guy, though. He's usually pretty good, but he's one of those ones that I think Mystery Science Theater's made him into more of a doofus than he is. I mean, yes, he was kind of a doofus in Mitchell. You look at a lot of his body of work, and you see a really good, intense actor.
Oh, he is a good actor. I've seen a lot of... he was the original Walking Tall.
He also took over for Carol O'Connor in The Heat of the Night for a while.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he was a doofus in Mitchell, and a lot of his like more recent stuff, he was just, you know, the fat dumbbell in. But yeah, a lot of his younger years, he was like the tough guy or the muscle or whatnot. So yeah, I think it didn't help much that he said that if he ever sees any of the Mystery Science Theater people, he's going to punch him in the face.
He's awesome. Love him in Cape Fear and Walking Tall and stuff like that. He's the Cape Fear remake, I should say. He's a really... I've always liked his presence. He's really got that like that kind of southern tough guy appeal. Really awesome in the original Walking Tall. Just a solid actor. And I've honestly never even considered him to be a that guy. He's always just, you know, an actor, just like a guy that you know. By name, because he's awesome.
Well, speaking about Mitchell, what about the villain in Mitchell, John Saxon? He's a that guy to most people. We know him from Enter the Dragon and Nightmare on Elm Street and all that, but a lot of people would kind of go, oh, that guy. Honestly, and I'm not trying to take anything away from Bruce Lee, John Saxon's my favorite part of Enter the Dragon. I don't know what that says about me.
He's awesome in that movie. John Saxon is fantastic. And easily one of my favorite like dudes that show up in Z to B grade movies. He's in one of my I would consider it to be my favorite rip-off exploitation movie, Hands of Steel. He goes around trying to hunt down Daniel Green with a giant fucking laser gun that's bigger than him. It's like the cannibal movie that's taking place in New York or whatever. Like the guy has just been in so many.
Takes place in Georgia.
Ah, well, I haven't seen it in a while. But yeah, the like urban cannibal film, and they're just awesome in that. And he's just in so many, he's in those movies that to me like define exactly what I enjoy watching. Like he's easily one of my favorites.
He's charismatic as hell. If you've ever seen the A-Team episode, The Children of Jamestown, where he basically playing Jim Jones, he oozes charisma. He steals that whole episode from the A-Team cast.
Oh, John Saxton's great. I mean, going from, Nightmare on Elm Street, from Blood Beach, he's just always good. I always dig the guy.
I think the first time I ever saw him was he was a bounty hunter on Kung Fu that was going after the bounty on David Carradine's head in the 70s, and I remember him from that. One of my favorite that guys is somebody that's become much more recognizable in the last few years, but that's Dean Winters. Ryan O'Reilly from Oz, he's also the reason he's gotten more mainstream play is he was Dennis Duffy on 30 Rock, which really he stole every episode he was in because he was so nuts. I hate to say it, more people know him as Mayhem from the insurance commercials than they do anything else, which kind of pisses me off.
Those are great commercials, though.
They are great commercials, but it's sad that he's been in like 100 different movies and TV shows, and they know him from the insurance commercials.
Well, he was just in John Wick.
Yeah, he was the second in command under the bad guy, and yeah. He was great in that.
He was great in that.
Yeah.
Oh, Dean Winters is great. It's funny that for him, it's probably worth it to do the. To do the Mayhem commercials. They're paying him good, and
a lot of good money.
Yeah, I mean, and it's very possible that may have been part of what got him the job in John Wick, you know. So hey, man, work is work.
I remember him as Leahidi's boyfriend in Terminator, the TV series.
Oh yeah.
He was David Caruso's brother on CSI Miami. Yeah, because those two are even remotely similar looking, right?
Yeah, right.
Like, all right, I don't know how you guys got that one, but fine, whatever.
I just want people to know about the guy. It's like with, like I had said about that guys in general, if people know about them, that's awesome. But I do think he deserves a lot more credit as an actor and not just a guy that was in a string of funny commercials, because the guy is painfully underrated. He's fucking awesome, and he's got a great unique look to him. Like, to me, he's one of those dudes that deserves to get more work and definitely deserves to be more well known for what he's doing in the movies and on TV.
Well, there's a certain that guy who only underground film fans knew him for the longest time, and then somehow, probably due to Quentin Tarantino, he gained mainstream acceptance to the point where he's in Snickers commercials now, and that's Danny Trejo. Danny Trejo is always awesome, and he's in big budget stuff like XXX, and then he's in just low budget crap that where they could only afford him for a day. Danny Trejo, I think, is an awesome actor. I've heard he's a fantastic person in real life. Danny Trejo is starting to move out from being that guy because people are starting to know his name, but for the longest time, he was that guy.
Danny Trejo is a guy that I would see in so many movies, you know, growing up, stuff like, he would pop up in movies like Con Air and stuff like that. And I go, who's that like weird badass looking guy? I want to see him in more stuff. And then I'm really glad that he got to do stuff like Machete and be in more things and be brought into the spotlight, because he really does add a lot to movies he's in. My favorite movie he did was a lesser known Mickey Rourke flick from 1998, Point Blank, in which he plays a coked out escaped convict that has an awesome fist fight with Mickey Rourke at the end. Really love Danny Trejo, always have, and I'm really glad that he's in so many more things and has broke out from being that guy, and now people actually recognize him for his roles and as Machete and stuff like that. So I think that's just fantastic, because the guy is just super cool.
Oh, I love the guy. He always delivers, like, whatever the role requires of him. I've seen ones where he plays badass assassins. I've seen ones where he's the angry father. I've seen ones where he's like the kind-hearted Latino guy. I mean, he's so cool. Like, the movie Machete was basically made for him. Like, no, there's no other person. It's like, look, we're going to tailor make a movie for just for you. Like, and if you're not going to star in it, the movie's not going to get made.
And the first Machete was great. The second one.
The second one was hilarious.
The second one was balls.
The second one was hilarious.
God. The second one was teabagging the audience.
No, it wasn't. He's not the kind of guy that normally you would think of getting mainstream success, which is what makes it so much cooler, is that here's this dude who, you know, he's in his, what, 50s now, and he's all tattooed, and he's got the long hair, and he sticks out like a sore thumb.
And he's in a Super Bowl Snickers commercial.
Yeah, he's exactly. So, yeah, just great guy.
One of my favorite that guys is one that is still unfortunately a that guy, even with the body of work he's done, and that is LQ Jones. Because LQ Jones, he started way back in the 50s. He was in a lot of westerns. He was usually a heavy, usually a bad guy. And then he became one of Sam Peckinpah's stock players. He was in everything Peckinpah did after he was discovered. And his arguably his most famous on-screen role is Joe Bob Briggs' uncle in Casino, the one that causes all of the problems for Robert De Niro. That's LQ Jones, who, by the way, Peter, you might be interested to know, is also the director of A Boy and His Dog.
Oh, man. That's awesome.
He directed The Devil's Bedroom and A Boy and His Dog and an Incredible Hulk episode. But I think LQ Jones is one of the best that guys out there.
No, I know LQ Jones. I mean, I didn't know him as well, but with a name like that and then with some of the movies that he's been in, especially due to the fact that he directed Boy and His Dog, of course I knew that.
Love him in Casino and everything else I've seen him in. Did not know that he directed A Boy and His Dog, but I mean, I did just see that movie recently. So, but yeah, he's an awesome dude. That's definitely one of the greats when it comes to that guy that'll show up in a movie that you'll recognize. He's a very cool dude.
LQ Jones is indicative of what a lot of older that guys had as their early part of their career, and that's what I call guest starred in one episode of every TV show ever made. You look at LQ Jones' list, as well as Michael Ironside, John Saxon, and all that. They were in, like, you know, one episode of Ironside. They were in a Kung Fu. They were in an Incredible Hulk. They were in a Charlie's Angels, in a One McLeod, in a Chips, in a Columbo, in a How the West Was Won, in a Runaways, in a Vegas, in an Enos, in a Walking Tall, in a Dukes of Hazzard, in a Fall Guy. You see where I'm going, where they guest star in one episode of every goddamn show that there is. That doesn't happen as often anymore, but when you look at the older that guys, you start to notice that. I don't know if that's good or bad, that you're good enough to be in this one and be memorable in it, but we're not going to bring you back.
Well, they probably just like that particular actor and they want to put them in their show. Like, I think that's just the case.
You know, then you look at actors like Robert Davi. We talked about him a lot when we did the Maniac Cop retrospective. Robert Davi is one of those as well. He was also a one episode of every TV show ever. He was in a Lou Grant. He was in an Incredible Hulk, in a Barnaby Jones, in a Trapper John, in a Dynasty, in a St. Elsewhere, in a Hill Street Blues, and on. Robert Davi arguably became famous as a Bond villain, which is kind of strange, isn't it?
He's my favorite Bond villain, actually. I love the Timothy Dalton ones. Robert Davi is just one of those guys, just fantastic, awesome, and the really, really filled the shoes of Bruce Campbell very well for Maniac Cop 2 and 3. And he's, to me, one of the funniest parts of Die Hard. With the two FBI dudes, there's him and, like, the younger black dude, and they're riding around in the helicopter, and he's just like, fucking Saigon, right? I was in high school, dickhead.
I guess we're going to need new FBI guys.
Yeah.
Yes. And let's not forget, he farted himself to death in Tracks.
Yes, he literally blew himself up with a fart in Tracks. That's true. And, you know, he also has the best line in Showgirls. Must be weird not having anybody come on you.
Oh, I love the guy. He, to me, I know he technically is a that guy, but I've known who he was for so long because, I mean, he's just had a wide variety of stuff of playing good guys, bad guys. You know, he's never, some movies he's never been typecast, but he's just always brought his A game, no matter what movie he's done. He's been in big movies, been in small movies. It's kind of like Eric Roberts in that sense, where no matter what movie he's in, he's always like good. Like the movie might be crap, but he always, you could tell, is actually putting forth effort.
You know, another one that does that. This next guy, Michael Biehn, is a little more recognizable because he's been in all the James Cameron movies and that. But a lot of people still don't know his name. I still, when people see him in Terminator, when that's on TV, a guy I used to work with was like, oh, Hicks from Aliens is in this. You know, nobody knows the name Michael Biehn. They recognize him. They know, oh, from Aliens and Terminator and The Rock and The Abyss and all this, but they don't know his name. I love Michael Biehn. I think he's a fantastic actor with the qualifier when he's cast properly. I've seen him cast, remember that Demi Moore, Jürgen Prochnow movie, The Seventh Sign from the 90s? Michael Biehn is a brain surgeon in that. Don't buy it for a second! In the 1997 miniseries Asteroid, he's the head of FEMA. Don't buy it for a second! Michael Biehn is one of those guys that's so easy to miscast that it becomes laughable. And I don't think that's necessarily Michael Biehn's fault. But to me, I can't take him seriously if he's not playing a cowboy, a rogue, a cop, an FBI agent, or a soldier.
I don't know. He was pretty good in Time Bomb. But I guess
he was kind of a soldier. He was like, you know,
soldier was a soldier with amnesia.
Yeah, but he was still a badass soldier in Time Bomb. But yes, Michael Biehn is the first one you think of to play the head of FEMA or to play a brain surgeon.
Yeah, not really the first person I would pick. I mean, I love the guy. There was a movie that came out a few years ago called Bereavement that he was excellent in. Yeah, I mean, I guess he's kind of unfortunately at the point where he is kind of taking the roles that are offered to him. You know, because he doesn't quite have the calling card that he used to. Now, he's going to be in the next Alien movie, so I'm kind of hoping that'll bring his status back up, because really all it takes is one hit to get you back on, you know, that gravy train.
Tarantino approved that with Travolta.
You know, Tarantino did that with Travolta and Samuel L. Jackson, because, I mean, Travolta, he revitalized his career, but not a lot of people had even knew who the hell Samuel L. Jackson was until Pulp Fiction. And now, you know, he's a household name. So, yeah, all it takes is that right role to get you back in the mainstream. And next thing you know, you're going.
Easily one of my favorite actors. At least everything that I've seen him in, I loved him in. And I think the example I'll make, since, you know, it's easy to talk about Terminator, it's easy to talk about Aliens. One of my all-time favorite Michael Biehn roles is Johnny Ringo in Tombstone. Like, that is just, he's so badass as, like, you know, as like the cowboy, and just the exchanges he has with other heavyweights like Kurt Russell and Val Kilmer at the time, and Sam Elliott. Just the way he delivers his lines, like, I want your blood, and I want your souls, and I want them right now. He's just awesome in that movie. He's just playing that, and as you said, soldiers and cops, like, he was born to play that because he really has that genuine badass appeal about him. I've always loved Michael Biehn. To me, he was never that guy. I've known him by name since I saw him in Terminator for the first time. That dude is just awesome.
Well, one that I recognize, this is one of the more weird that guys, as he's able to really go to comedy, hardcore action. He can play a good guy and a bad guy, and that's William Sadler. To people like us, we know him as the senator being taken to the blood bank in Hard to Kill. Star Trek fans would know him as Sloan from Section 31. He's also been on like Roswell, and the new Hawaii Five-0 has thrust him into the spotlight again, with that show inexplicably being a hit for some reason. You know, he was the corrupt sheriff in Machete Kills. He's in the From Dusk Till Dawn TV series and whatnot. You know, he's also was a regular on Roseanne. He was on Married with Children. He's one of those, you know, arguably his most famous role would be under such makeup no one would recognize him as the Grim Reaper in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey, who I think stole that movie from Bill and Ted.
Yeah, he did. He's Everybody so loves the good. Grim Reaper.
But you say William Sadler, they go, who? I remember him on old Roseanne episodes as one of Dan's buddies.
I loved him in Die Hard 2. I really loved him in the, as the villain in that movie. I think he makes for just an epic villain, and he can also play a great great bad guy as well, or a great good guy as well. I think a great underrated role of his is in Demon Knight. I really like him in that one. Just a very, very cool dude. Very unique features. Like, there's not really anybody that that looks like him or is like him. Like, he's just fantastic. He's got such great comedic timing as well as, like, an intense presence. He really can play, you know, quirky guys, funny guys, goofy guys, bad guys, good guys, you know, badasses and cowardly villains. The guy is just such a amazingly wide range as an actor. I've always really liked him a lot.
Where do you know William Sadler from most? I know you're a Star Trek fan. You know Sloan, don't you?
From
Deep Space Nine.
But for me, I always go back to his character in Disturbing Behavior, where he's the janitor. He's not all together there in the head, you know. So that was kind of the thing. He was so good in that, and it's, you know, such a overlooked a movie. Yeah, but I mean, that's just the one that I kind of go back to with him. But I mean, that Green Mile, like Peter said, man, just him in Demon Knight, just Bordello of Blood. Well, he was in Bordello of Blood. He was the mummy.
That's right. He was the mummy in the Bordello of Blood framing sequence. Yeah, that's right.
In both movies. And also he was in, I believe, episode one of Tales from the Crypt as the dude that
the executioner.
Yeah.
Well, another William would be William Fichtner. Now, he's been in so much stuff. People know his face, but your average guy off the street doesn't know the name William Fichtner. There is one movie that sums up how goddamn awesome Fichtner is, and
Teenage Turtles.
Drive Angry. He steals. He steals like a bandit in the night, that movie from Nicolas Cage. Fichtner is the main character of Drive Angry, as far as I'm concerned. I know it's a Nicolas Cage movie, but to me, it's a William Fichtner movie.
Well, Fichtner, he was in a movie called Go. He wasn't...
Cop that was trying to sell products?
Yes.
To Jay Moore and Scott Wolf, yeah.
Because they thought, like, they were going to get busted, and they had to go to, like, have dinner with them.
Well, then there was this whole gay vibe for a while, too.
Exactly. They're like, are we going to get raped? Because it was Jay Moore and Scott Wolf. And they went and they had dinner with him, and it was like, wait, I think they were like Amway salesmen or something.
Yeah.
But he was great. And I mean, he wasn't in the movie very much, but he was in, you know, that really memorable part.
He was D'Onofrio's psychotic partner in Strange Days.
He was in the show was kind of good, but he was amazing. He was in the TV show version of Invasion, which was Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Yes, that show was terrible, but he was very good in it.
I wouldn't say it was terrible, like, but
it took too long. Okay, the problem was it took too long. I watched the whole one season because I worked at an ABC station at the time, so we got them early. It took 22 episodes to tell a story that should have only taken 11. The show was so padded. I kept going, do something.
I don't know. I kind of dug it. I liked seeing him and the wife, how like they played this very manipulative characters. And but he was
one
definitely
of the first ones taken over, if I remember.
Yeah, he was one of the first ones that got taken, because I believe it was, I haven't seen it in years, but I think it was like the sheriff or something.
Yeah, Sheriff Tom Underlay.
Yeah. So yeah, he was the sheriff. He did such a good job. He was clearly acting on a level very high above everyone else.
Yeah, he was acting on a level like this was something to be taken seriously, not a really, really bad Alien Invasion Lost knockoff.
I still don't think it was bad. I liked it. I was actually kind of sad that it didn't get to continue, because they, of course, ended it on a goddamn cliffhanger.
I was actually gonna talk about Drive Angry. He's amazing as the accountant in that film, and he is one of those actors where he deserves to get bigger roles and be in bigger films. Like his like small part in The Dark Knight as the bank manager, even there, like, he's incredibly impressive, just his presence and everything. And he's only in the movie for like maybe 5 minutes.
He's the only watchable thing about Lone Ranger. No, I'm serious. Yeah. He's a great villain, but that movie's terrible.
Oh God, yeah, it was horrendous. But yeah, I agree. Like he'll brighten a movie up, whether it's already good, and he'll make it better just by being in it. Like Drive Angry would have still been a great movie. It's pretty much the Ghost Rider film we should have got, but having Fichtner in there as the villain just elevates it all that much more, and the way him and Nicolas Cage play off each other is just, it's perfect. It's just, it really is, it's magic in motion to watch that movie happen, and it's so disappointing that it's an underrated film and not many people know about it, because it's one of the best, like, ultra-violent action movies to come out in a long time.
Another that guy is somebody whose name most people can't pronounce, and he's associated with William Fichtner as he was on Prison Break with him. Well, not on him. They were in different seasons, but they were on Prison Break together, and that's Peter Stormare, one of the most over-the-top, one of the most ridiculously over-the-top fun actors I have ever seen, and yet he's most well-known as stereotypical German guy in those Volkswagen commercials. You know, but people don't remember him from The Big Lebowski or Armageddon or Prison Break or anything like that. He is so ridiculously over the top. I love Peter Stormare. Peter Stormare needs more work.
Well, I don't know if he needs, because he's like pretty consistently in movies, even if it's just his bit parts. The way his line delivery is hilarious and over the top. The way he delivers stuff, his character in Fargo, his character in Big Lebowski, Armageddon, just the way he's introduced, it's just him on the camera in the space station. This is the Russian space station. He's great. He's got so much charisma, and I think truly defines a character actor.
Well, I think, you know, more people probably know him from Fargo at this point. I mean, for movies. I mean, obviously they know the Volkswagen commercials. People remember him from Fargo, Armageddon, or possibly Minority Report. He's got the single best scene in the 2005 Constantine movie as Satan.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
He is just on a different level in Constantine, isn't he?
Oh, he's another one who's great. I was going to say Fargo, but you brought it up. Yeah, he was just a force to be reckoned with in Fargo. And then he did have the little bit part in Armageddon, which is where a lot of people know him from. He was good in a very overlooked movie called Dylan Dog. As Satan in Constantine. Just, I've seen him in so many things, and he never disappoints. He's always good.
Well, a more recent that guy is Walton Goggins. You know, because people are really noticing him, both due to Justified. I mean, he was starting to get notice on The Shield as Shane Vandrell, but they really know him from Justified, or Tarantino used him in Django Unchained, and he's one of the main characters in The Hateful Eight. So Tarantino, again, comes up, bringing that guy to the forefront. I remember when he was a 16-year-old on In the Heat of the Night. He was in a really early Renegade episode, and he was one of the bad guys in the next Karate Kid with Michael Ironside. I think Walton Goggins is so insane. Of all the characters that you remember from Predators, his is one of the ones you remember the most, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Or, I gotta say it, him on Sons of Anarchy, where he plays pre-op transsexual Venus Van Damme, is just glorious.
Well, he just popped up. I went to see American Ultra the other night, and he plays one of the, actually not one of the, he is the head evil government assassin guy.
Well, it's kind of funny, though. It's like you got Tarantino that uses him. You got the S.H.I.E.L.D. guys, you know, who also did Sons of Anarchy and Justified, who keep using him. It's kind of funny he didn't stick with Rob Zombie, because everyone seems to forget he was Tom Toll's partner in House of a Thousand Corpses. He was the one that got shot to the Slim Whitman song in slow motion. People forget he was in House of a Thousand Corpses.
Well, Walton Goggins makes me want to do, it'll be like 5 o'clock, bitch raping time. Walton Goggins is great. He's a guy that I watched on Justified. I remember him from House of a Thousand Corpses. He's just easily, he's what makes Predators a memorable, iconic film. Like, it's not even so much Predators in them or anything like that, or the action sequences. It's his character and how over the top and hilarious he is.
And he dies super violent in that, too. While still alive, the Predator reaches into his spinal column and just pulls it in his skull right out of his body. It is the most hyper-violent death in that film. Another one that I always liked was David Morse. You know, I knew him from St. Elsewhere, but he's also been in a ton of movies, usually as a villain. He also is in Drive Angry. We're going to go through the whole Drive Angry cast, I guess. But, you know, he was also on Sequest and 12 Monkeys, Long Kiss Goodnight. He's done some really, really big stuff, like Proof of Life, What's-Her-Face's husband that they were trying to get back. He had the great, well, the first season of Hack was really good. The second wasn't. He was on House and whatnot. I think David Morse is a fantastic that guy. Cecil, I'll go to you since you kind of have met him.
Well, I had the pleasure of working with Mr. Morse one day, and he recorded.
Is he as nice as he probably is to me?
Okay, I had to. He recorded some audio for the National Constitution Center. Came into our office. He was using our sound booth. He came by himself, like no publicist, no nothing. Walked through Philadelphia. And just, you know, walked down, came to our place and went in. You know, he had a hat and glasses on, you know, recorded his audio, stayed afterwards. And after we were doing it, they were taking the audio and just making sure everything was good. And he was sitting around talking with us and was the coolest guy, was answering questions about his TV shows, was taking pictures with everybody. And then it was like, all right, well, I'll see you guys later. It was great working with you. You know, take care. Puts his hat on, walks back out into the street. Nobody was the wiser. Nobody knew, you know.
That's why he's a that guy. But personally, I think he's a great actor, and people don't realize he's also a director. And people don't even remember that he directed an episode of Friday the 13th, the series, because that's why.
I really like him in there's a lesser-known film called Disturbia, which features a very young Shia LaBeouf in which he plays a serial killer neighbor. He's great in that. I love him in The Rock as Ed Harris's army buddy. Just those two in that movie just completely steal the show, and it's so good.
He was Jodie Foster's dad in Contact.
Mm-hmm. He's one of those awesome that guys, and he's got a... Like, there's a vibe about him that's very cool. Like, he's got this, you know, like he's a big dude and kind of scary, but, like, at the same time, there's like, a level-headedness or something. Like, it's a very – the dude just gives off a cool vibe no matter, like, what he plays. He's awesome and very wrongfully underrated. More people need to know about that guy because he's fantastic.
So, as we're running down – all these that guys, I'm sure, I mean, this was just my list. Have I left off any that guys that you guys, that you two think people should know more?
Yeah, I've got a list here, and I'll, one is Marco Rodriguez, who, much like John Saxon and guys like Michael Ironside, have been in an episode of pretty much every show ever, and then also appear in movies. He was recently in Nightcrawler. He was recently in Nightcrawler. He's at the beginning of the movie. He was I got his name wrong earlier in the episode. He's the guy at the beginning of Cobra that wants to gun down the whole grocery store and then gets shot six times by Stallone and gets a knife thrown into him for good measure.
It's the only way to be sure.
Exactly. He's just one of those guys that you immediately recognize, and I really like him. Like, I've seen him pop up randomly in shows like Seinfeld, and I'm sure he's done a lot of, like, you know, the CSI cop-related type shows, and he's in a lot of – he's one of those, like, who's who of random dudes to pop up in action movies. Same with – the dude's name is Thomas – I'll probably pronounce this wrong – Thomas Rosales Jr., who – literally has shown up in like every action movie. He's that guy that you'll always, he's the black curly haired Mexican dude that's always getting shot by Schwarzenegger or Stallone or Steven Seagal. And then of course, you know, Erwin Keyes, who is so much of a that guy that he was in both Exterminator movies as different characters. So I love all these, the random dudes that just like will show up that you'll recognize in action movies or horror movies. And Michael Jai White is one of my favorites because I truly believe that he deserves to be a much bigger actor.
Well, we couldn't talk about this and not talk about the great Dick Miller. You know, everything from the Terminator to Gremlins to Small Soldiers.
The old Corman stuff all the way to, you know, Joe Dante. Dick Miller has been in every single project, whether it's a TV show or a movie, that Joe Dante has ever made. He has had his scenes deleted in two cases, so he doesn't appear in the finished film, but he had scenes shot for every single thing Joe Dante's ever done.
Then I'll go with Al Leung, who has a book coming out. It might be out yet. I have to look that up to see if it's out. But he's what a lot of people know him from. Probably the most people would know him. He was the guy, one of the terrorists in the original Die Hard. Lethal Weapon. He was in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. He was in Scorpion King and just a bajillion other things. He was in 24. You can't mistake the guys. You know, he's got the bald head, but he's got the long mullet in the back and the big Fu Manchu.
And he's got the mustache. In Die Hard, he actually, they've taken over Nakatomi Plaza. And he kind of feels bad stealing a candy bar from the
from the
case.
Well, it's because he's sitting there with the Uzi and he's looking and he looks down and he grabs the candy bar. I mean, that's
and then he's kind of looking around all guilty like.
Yeah, like anybody notice if he's taking a candy bar? Yeah, it's that. That's that. I wonder.
Yeah, I remember torturing Mel Gibson in Lethal Weapon. Yeah.
Yeah, he tortured, you know, with the sponges.
Yeah.
And then I'm gonna go with Charles S. Dutton. Who was from Alien 3.
Charles Dutton, I don't know if I'd call him a that guy. He's in some pretty mainstream stuff. I mean, Christ, he's won, like, what, 4 Emmys?
Yeah, but still a lot of people don't necessarily know who he is. Like, he's the black that guy, you know?
No. Keith David is the black that guy.
Oh, yeah, that is true. All right, so he's the other black that guy. But he's great. I love him. Like, he's been in movies where I like the movie was terrible, but he was good. And there's been times where there would be a movie that I'm like, oh, I have no interest in seeing that. And then I'm like, oh, Charles S. Dutton's in it. All right, I'll watch it. You know?
Do you think that the whole that guy phenomenon in the age of the internet, I mean, like when people like LQ Jones were coming up, people might recognize an actor, but they're not going to learn their name. Do you think the internet has changed the whole that guy phenomenon at all? Or do you think there really is a difference between like when LQ Jones was that guy versus when Dean Winters was that guy?
I don't really think so, because even though we have this access to, you know, infinite information, you still have people that don't bother to look up who someone is. Watch a movie and they're like, oh, that guy's in it, and they're not gonna like go on the IMDb, or they're not gonna actually take the time to like look who the person is. They're just gonna be like, oh, great, that guy's in the movie. So I think that it's still kind of a phenomenon that will just continue to go on as long as people you know, don't really take that much of an interest. Because you have to consider there are a lot of people that will just watch movies and not care. Like, we're kind of on the fringes of, we watch movies, we look out for certain actors, we know their names, we know their history. There are people that are just like, I'm going to watch this movie because Julia Roberts is in it. You know, what's it about? It doesn't matter. It's got Julia Roberts in it. You know,
we do the same thing with Michael Ironside's in it. I don't even care what it's about.
Right. But what I'm saying is, but we know all the other players. Like, they'll just pick a movie because it's a mainstream star and watch it. And, you know, they won't know all the additional people that are in it. You know, they might recognize one or two people here, or, hey, this guy's in it, or Tom Cruise is in this. But they're not quite as, proficient in the smaller characters as we are.
Not particularly. I mean, it does give, as Cecil said, there's the option that you could look somebody up, but there are a lot of people who will just be like, oh, well, this mainstream person's in this movie, I'll watch it. And they won't look up anybody else, or they won't care who directed it or anything like that. It's still kind of the same, just now people have access to learn if they want to, and a lot of people choose not to. I mean, we're kind of different as movie watchers, people that actually take the time to learn the names of the actors and who's directing it and what they're known for. Like, for me, when I watch a movie, it's, oh, Michael Ironside's in it. Who directed it? Oh, produced by Roger Corman? Okay, I'll watch it. You know, there's a bit more of a process to me watching a movie other than just, ooh, that actor is in it. Though, when it comes to John Saxon, I usually feel pretty safe watching something with him in it because it's usually going to be pretty goddamn entertaining. Same with Michael Ironside.
None of us are probably ever going to get to the status of being a that guy. But Cecil, if anyone wants to make you a that guy, where would they find you?
You can see me being that robot over on escapistmagazine.com, goodbadflix.com, geekjuicemedia.com, and all your other social media fun houses.
Peter, you're in Canada. There's a good chance you could get cast in anything since they shoot everything up there. You might be a that guy. Where can people find you?
You can see me maybe possibly being a that guy on Twitter at Cinematica, Facebook the Cinematicus, YouTube the Cinematicus, and that guying it up on 1201beyond.com.
Speaking of 1201beyond.com, that's where I am. That's my site. You can contact the show at 1201beyond@gmail.com. Remember, guys, it's not about the star, it's about the performance. All of the that guys that we brought up tonight really give it their all. Don't overlook them just because they're not the star. They deserve recognition as well. They're not that guy. Learn their goddamn name. Have some respect.
See the features of my rage. Begin to shoot the fiend without a face.
Is a 1201 Beyond production. Visit 1201beyond.com for more great shows.